Beck's hand with gauze on the inside and an ace bandage around the outside. I put my hand on Beck's knee. "I'm so sorry, honey. I should have told you it stayed hot even when the color changed." A little while later, a nurse came in and gave us dressing instructions, a tube of cream, and some gauze to use the next day so we didn't have to get to the store right away. Even though everyone treated it like it was a common occurrence, I still felt like shit. The first time Drew left me alone with his son, I'd broken him. "I look like a boxer," Beck announced on the way home from the hospital. "Dad, can you wrap my other hand? And maybe get this stuff in red?" He pointed to the ace bandage.
"Sure, buddy."
The two of them were back to their normal selves, but I still felt horrible. Drew reached over and put his hand on my knee as he drove.
"People are going to start looking at me funny with you two."
I furrowed my brow.
"You're in an air cast, and he's got a hand wrapped."
I covered my mouth. "Oh my God, imagine, they look at you funny, when both injuries are completely my fault." Drew's voice lowered.
"Seriously, I see you sitting there trying all sorts of guilt on for size. It was an accident. It could have been me making the popcorn, and the exact same thing would have happened."
"But it didn't."
"Stop beating yourself up. 2 months ago, he had a black eye from running into the dresser while his mother was watching him. He's a little boy. They do shit without thinking and get hurt."
"Oh, no."
"What?"
"I hadn't even thought of his mother. She's going to hate me."
"Don't worry about her. There wasn't much of a shot of her liking you anyway."
"Great. Just great." Chapter 35.
"Who are you?"
It only took 3 words to know the woman who walked into the office the next morning was a bitch. Skin-tight jeans, brown leather high-heel boots on long, thin legs, and a tiny little waist in a top that showed skin even though it was the end of January and freezing in New York City. I didn't want to look any higher. I wanted to go home and change into something less professional and more sexy. There was no doubt in my mind who she was. Dreading it, I skimmed the rest of the way up and was met with a face as nice as the body, of course. "I'm Emery Rose. And you are?"
"Alexa Jagger, Drew's wife."
Drew suddenly appeared next to me in the lobby.
"Ex-wife."
His narrowed eyes matched his curt response. Alexa rolled her eyes.
"Whatever. We need to talk."
"Make an appointment. I'm busy this morning."
She completely ignored Drew and brushed past him, strutting her way to his office. The two of us remained standing in the lobby for a moment. I spoke softly.
"Well, she's lovely."
Drew took a deep breath.
"You might want to put earplugs in."
"We're going!"
"You're not taking him on the road to follow a bunch of race car drivers around the country and homeschooling him. Go, if you want to go, but Beck is staying here."
"What is he going to do here with you? You work 60 hours a week."
"I make it work. At least here he has his school, his routine, his home."
"You don't make it work. You dump him on a babysitter. I've heard more about the new sitter this morning than you. And apparently she's not even competent to watch him since his hand is burned."
Shit.
The yelling quieted, and I knew Drew was trying to get himself under control. I pictured his jaw clenching and flexing as he breathed in fire and attempted to push out ice. When he finally spoke, his tone was more than angry. It teetered on lethal.
"You have no idea what you're talking about. I don't ship my son off to a babysitter. He was with me or my girlfriend the entire time, and he was well cared for."
"Girlfriend?" Alexa spat. "You're bringing my son around your fuck of the month now?"
"Our son," Drew growled. "And she isn't a fuck of the month. Unlike you, I've never introduced Beck to anyone I was seeing casually. All the times he's mentioned random men being around, I've kept my mouth shut and trusted you were being careful and respectful around him, and I expect the same in return for Emery."
"Emery? The woman I met in the lobby? You're fucking the hired help?"
"We're sharing space. She's a psychologist, not the hired help. And what the fuck would it matter to you if she swept the floor here? At least she has a job. You should try it. It might make you appreciate the $1,000 boots you're wearing right now.
I'm raising our son. It's a full-time job.
Funny how he's our son when I'm footing the bill for that full-time job, but yours when you want to take him on a NASCAR tour of redneck country.
I'm taking him, she snapped.
You're not taking him.
I don't think it's something you want to fight about. Beck should get to know his father and spend time with him.
I braced myself for the roar I knew was coming. He is spending time with his father.
I meant his biological father.
That wasn't my choice. You made sure of that. God knows I wouldn't have fucking married you had I known you were a whore carrying another man's child.
Screw you!
Get out, Alexa. Just get the fuck out.
Even though I knew it was coming, I jumped when she whipped open Drew's office door, and it slammed against the wall. Alexa left a wake of stomps and crashes behind her. I waited in my office for a few minutes, unsure whether I should give Drew time to cool off or attempt to comfort him. Eventually, when I heard nothing but silence, I decided to check on him. Drew's chair was pushed back from his desk, and he sat with his elbows on his knees and his head in his hands. "You okay?" I asked softly. He didn't look up when he answered. His voice was hoarse.
"Yeah."
I took a few hesitant steps into his office. "What can I do?" Drew shook his head a few times, then looked up.
"Can you make me that little boy's real father?"
My heart clenched in my chest when I saw his defeated expression. His eyes were red and filled with unshed tears, and I felt the pain I could see on his face. I knelt before him. "You are his real father, Drew." Even though he was listening to me, I wasn't getting through, so I decided to share a story I'd never told anyone. When I was 19, I decided I wanted to know who my birth mother was. I have no idea why. Nothing had gone wrong. I was just curious, I think. Anyway, my adoption was open, so the information was there if I wanted it. Not wanting to hurt my parents' feelings, I decided not to tell them and got the information on my own. Drew was paying attention now, so I continued. One Saturday, I told my parents I was going to a friend's house, and instead drove 4 hours across the state to the address where my birth mother lived. I sat outside her house and waited until she came out. Then I followed her to where she worked at a diner. After a couple more hours, I got up the nerve to actually go inside. I'd watched through the window, so I knew what section she was serving and requested a table near the window so she would be my waitress. Even though Drew was the one hurting, he reached out and squeezed my shoulder for encouragement.
"What happened?"
She came over to take my order, and I bumbled every word that came out of my mouth, but I managed to order toast and tea while I stared at her. I paused, thinking back to that day. "She had red hair." Drew stroked my cheek. "Anyway, while she was taking an order at the table next to me, my phone rang, and I saw it was my mother. I let it go to voicemail because I thought maybe she'd found out what I was doing somehow and was angry, but when I listened to her message, she just wanted to check in on me and see if everything was all right. She said I'd seemed a little down the day before. Needless to say, I felt guilty as hell. When the waitress, my birth mother, came to deliver my toast a few minutes later, I was crying. She looked right at me and never even asked if I was okay. Couldn't wait to dump the toast on the table and disappear. I sighed. I took one more look at the woman who had given birth to me and realized my mother was the woman who'd left me the voicemail. I was biologically connected to that waitress, and she didn't feel anything different for me than a complete stranger. Because that's what I was. A complete stranger. I threw a 20 on the table and never looked back. I caught Drew's eyes. "Being a parent is a choice, not a right. I really didn't understand why my parents celebrated Gotcha Day until then. You're Beck's dad. No different than Martin Rose is mine. Anyone can become a father, but..." but it takes a real dad to love and raise a child as his own.
Come here. Drew lifted me from the floor onto his lap. He pushed a lock of hair behind my ear. His previously angry and sad eyes had warmed.
Where'd you come from?
I broke in and showed you my ass, remember?
He laughed, and I felt a little of the tension dissipate when he wrapped me in his arms and kissed the top of my head.
Thank you. I needed that.
I was thrilled to have soothed him. Because Drew had been with Beck all week, this was actually the first afternoon we'd had alone in as long.
I don't have an appointment for another 2 hours, if there's anything else you need.
Drew was standing with me cradled in his arms practically before I finished the sentence. I yelped at the sudden motion. Expecting him to have me spread-eagled right there on his desk, I was surprised when he began marching toward the office door.
No desk sex? I asked.
The desk is for fucking. I want to make love to you.
Chapter 36. I could get used to this. I'd just gotten out of the shower and walked into the kitchen. Emery was standing at the stove wearing one of my dress shirts, which hung to her knees, and making something that smelled almost as good as she did. Music was playing, and I hung back in the doorway and watched as she swayed from side to side, singing some song I didn't recognize. As if sensing me, after a minute she turned and smiled. Breakfast is almost done? I nodded, but stayed put another minute, enjoying watching her. 5 days ago, after Alexa had stomped in and started in on me about wanting to take Beck on a road trip, I'd assumed my week would be shit, as was typical after one of our arguments. But Emery had a way of calming me, making me focus on the positive. It might also have helped that she'd been in my bed every night to help me alleviate any stress, and that I'd woken this morning to her head beneath the covers and her tongue licking me like I was a lollipop. She smiled and winked with a blush. Go sit. My turn to feed you. Yeah, there's a distinct possibility I could get used to this. What time is your first appointment? I asked. We'd finished breakfast, then I'd fucked her on the kitchen counter before cleaning up the dishes while she got ready. Now she was brushing some shit onto her eyelashes as she leaned into the mirror. 10, but I need to run to my apartment first. You? No appointments until this afternoon, but I have to draft a motion and get it over to family court by then. What do you need from your apartment? Clothes, unless you think I can get away with a belt and heels with this. She gestured to my dress shirt, which hung open, and she had nothing on underneath it. Loving the easy access, I cupped one tit in my hand before reaching down and kissing her perky nipple. Why don't you keep some clothes here for the nights you stay over, so you don't have to run home commando in your clothes from the day before? Even though the statement came without much thought, it didn't freak me out after I'd put it out there. Odd. Emery looked up at me. Are you offering me a drawer? I shrugged. Take half the closet if you want. I don't like the idea of you running around the city with your skirt and no underwear on in the mornings, even though I don't really get why you can't just turn them inside out and wear them again. She crinkled up her nose. That's a guy thing. After she finished putting on the makeup she kept in her purse, she got dressed and went back to her apartment. I called Alexa and left a message that I'd be by to pick Beck up for the weekend about 5 tonight. Grateful that her voicemail had answered instead of her, I went downstairs to get some work done, still in my good mood, only to be greeted by a process server waiting at my door. I was a divorce lawyer. It wasn't unusual to be served first thing in the morning. It was unusual for the service to be from an Atlanta court. I'd just finished reading the same paragraph in the motion for the 5th time. Changes have occurred since the last custody judgment that necessitate a modification in the child visitation order. The changes were unknown at the time of the final decree and justify a revision to the custody arrangement. It was the next part that had me sitting in my chair rather than heading to Alexa's apartment, because I feared what I was capable of after reading the rest. Annexed hereto, paternity has been established for Levi Archer Bodine, and not the defendant, granted visitation in the final decree of custody. The petitioner requests a modification from equal shared custody to allow the defendant visitation every other weekend for a period of 8 hours. The increased visitation of the petitioner is to allow time for the introduction of the biological father to the minor subject child. Further, the defendant's shared custody should be reduced based upon recent incidents of child neglect. Namely, the defendant has engaged in conduct which put the subject child at risk by exposing the child to known criminals. As a direct result of that conduct, the subject child has been injured. Wherefore, the petitioner has reason to be concerned about the safety of the minor subject child and requests an immediate modification of the custody decree. The annexed documentation in support of the petition included a copy of the purported criminal's most recent arrest and an emergency room report. The criminal was Emery, and of course, it was only a partial copy of the charges of indecent exposure. There was no mention that she'd been a teenager or that the charge was reduced last month. In addition to that crock of shit, there was a copy of the emergency room report bearing the diagnosis of accidental burn, along with an affidavit from a nurse that verified Beck was brought in with his father and the woman who had been watching him at the time of the injury. Emery Rose. After the third time I reached voicemail, I couldn't take it anymore and headed to Alexa's in person. It wasn't the smartest idea, considering the mood I was in, but I needed to have it out with her. I had only one thing to lord over this woman, but I had lots of it. Money. I wasn't above paying her to cut this shit out. Again. This little game was retaliation for telling her she couldn't take Beck on a 2-week tour following the NASCAR circuit. She needed to show me who was in control. I knew my ex-wife. She was cunning and all about making sure she had the upper hand. Our fight, and likely seeing Emery, had left her feeling that I needed to be put in my place. The first knock on her apartment door went unanswered, and only served to piss me off and make me knock louder. After 2 impatient minutes, I took out my key. When I'd kicked Alexa out and rented her this place, I'd kept a key for myself. There'd never been an occasion to use it, but I was done with her avoiding me. The lock was jammed, but after a minute of jiggling the key around, I felt some sense of relief hearing the loud clank as it slid open. Not wanting to get smacked in the head with a pan, I cracked the door open and yelled. Alexa? No answer. A second time. Alexa? The hallway was quiet, and there wasn't a sound coming from inside the apartment. Deciding it was safe, I pushed the door open. And my heart stopped when I saw what was inside.
Chapter 37. Something was going on. Office doors had been slamming for the entire last half of my telephone counseling session. In the past 10 minutes, yelling had started as well. One voice was a very pissed-off Drew, and the other was Roman, who'd recently arrived. He frequently did investigations for Drew, but whatever was happening seemed way more personal than just a case. After apologizing again to my patients, lying and telling them I was going to have a word with the construction crew about their language, I hung up and started toward my closed office door. I stopped upon hearing my name.
Emery, what the hell has she got to do with this?
Alexa basically told the court that I'm sleeping with an ex-con.
An ex-con? What'd she do? Get a parking ticket?
It's a long story, but she was arrested for indecency last month.
What?
Happened when she was a teenager. It was an appearance ticket for skinny dipping that turned into a warrant because she hadn't paid it. It's a misdemeanor. Nothing more serious than a parking ticket. But, of course, Alexa is making it out to be something more. The petition calls her an ex-con with a penchant for indecent exposure. And she also added in that it was the same ex-con who recently caused Beck to get burned.
Fuck.
Yeah, fuck. That's not the worst part. I could talk my way out of that in a New York court with the shit that judges hear every day. But she filed the change of custody motion in Atlanta.
How can she do that when you both live here?
I just came from her apartment. She's gone. Doorman said she left yesterday and gave a forwarding address. Her place is empty. She fucking moved.
Drew wasn't a heavy drinker.
He had the occasional glass of whiskey or a beer or two, but slamming them back wasn't something I'd seen him do. Until tonight. Even though he'd assured me that none of it was my fault, I still felt guilty as the catalyst for making him look like an unfit parent. We sat in Drew's apartment. Both of us had cleared our afternoon schedules. I'd promised Roman that Drew would be at the airport for their flight tomorrow morning. The two of them were flying down to Atlanta to attempt to talk to Alexa, and I was really glad Drew wasn't going alone. He couldn't even say his ex-wife's name without growling. Closing the door behind Roman, I locked the top lock, picked up Drew's drink from the kitchen counter, and dumped the rest down the drain. Then I went to the couch where he lay with one arm covering his eyes. His legs were longer than the couch, and his feet dangled over the end. I unlaced his shoes and began to take them off.
"You trying to get me naked?" Drew slurred. "Fuck the shoes. Take off my pants."
I smiled. Even loaded, the man was still himself. "It's almost 11 o'clock. Your flight is in 10 hours. I figure you need to get some sleep. The morning may not be too kind to your head." His large shoes clomped to the floor as I slipped them off, followed by his socks.
"I can't lose my son."
My heart broke, hearing the anguish in his cracked voice. "You won't. If you can't buy her off, you'll convince a judge that your son needs you and belongs with you."
"There's not much justice in our justice system. People like me twist it into a game every day."
I didn't know how to respond to that. I just wanted to do whatever I could to make him feel better. So I slipped off my own shoes, crawled up on the couch, and wrapped my arms around him, snuggling against his chest. "I'm sorry this is happening. It's so clear how much you love that little boy. A judge has to see that." He squeezed me in response, and a few minutes later, after I thought he'd drifted off to sleep, he spoke again, his words barely a whisper.
"You want kids, Oklahoma?"
"I do. I'd love to have a few and maybe adopt, too."
"You're going to be a good mom someday." "We couldn't find her. The address she left for forwarding was her brother's place. Guy's a loser. Got to his place at 2 o'clock and he was still sleeping."
Drew's chuckle rumbled over the phone line.
"Well, he was until he was suddenly dangling in the air from Roman's hands."
"You broke in?"
"Didn't have to. Front door wasn't even locked. Trust me, he doesn't need to. Roaches don't even want to go inside that place."
"Did he tell you where Alexa was?"
"He didn't know."
"He's lying for his sister?"
"Don't think so. He would have given her up. His skinny little junky ass was so afraid of Roman, he pissed himself. Plus, I know the guy. He would have tried to sell me where she was for enough to buy his next fix if he'd had any clue. Guy would sell his mother for $20.
"So what do you do now?"
"I got to the courthouse before they closed and filed an emergency restraining order, asking the judge to force her to go back to New York. Our custody agreement doesn't allow either one of us to take Beck out of state without permission from the other. They'll add the motion to the calendar with her change of custody demand for the day after tomorrow. If we can't find her by Thursday, she'll have to at least show up for court then."
"Is there anything I can do?"
"Nah, thanks, babe. Just hearing your voice is good for me."
I smiled. "Maybe later tonight I'll call you and this voice will have some dirty things to say."
"Yeah." I bit my lip.
"I'm a team player. I want to help any way I can."
"I'll get rid of Roman for a while later. He likes to sit at the bar and nurse a few whiskeys at the end of the day. Don't think I'll be doing that for a long time after last night. Much rather hear you come while you tell me how much you miss my cock."
"You got it. I'm going home soon."
"Okay, babe. Call me later when you're settled in."
"Drew?"
"Yeah."
"Just so you know, I miss you and your cock." He groaned my name.
"Hurry up home."
I'd never had phone sex, and I was really looking forward to calling Drew, so much so that I'd put on a cute little silky shorts and camisole set and some perfume for the occasion. It was a little after 10, so I figured he'd probably be settling in for the night, too. Picking up my cell, I dialed his number and smiled when he answered with a gruff voice.
You naked?
No, but I can be. My hand was on the kitchen light switch, ready to turn it off and take my cell phone to bed with me, when there was a knock at my door. Drew heard it, too.
Someone there?
I think so. Hang on a second. I walked to the door and peeked through the peephole, even though I knew who it was without looking. It wasn't like I had many friends in the city, much less ones who would just drop by. Can I call you back in a few minutes?
Do I want to know who it is?
Probably not. Give me a few minutes to get rid of him. After I ended the call, I grabbed a sweater from the closet and pulled it on before opening the door.
Baldwin? Is everything all right?
Yes, fine. I just wanted to check on you. I knocked last night, but you weren't home. So I tried this morning, and you still weren't here. And then you didn't answer my texts today. I was beginning to get worried.
My feelings for Baldwin had been so jumbled, I'd forgotten he was a good friend to me for a few years.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you worry. I'm fine. Everything is fine. Just a crazy day yesterday, followed by a hectic one today.
He didn't seem convinced, so I decided to be honest.
I've started seeing someone. I stayed over at his place last night.
Oh.
He gave me a sad smile that seemed forced.
Well, I'm glad you're okay.
When I didn't offer to have him come in, his eyes roamed over my face like he was looking for something. I waited in awkward silence, clutching my sweater shut as I stood there. Eventually, Baldwin gave me a curt nod, and his eyes dropped to my bare legs.
Is it the lawyer?
For some reason, it rubbed me wrong that he called him the lawyer and not by his name.
Drew, yes.
He looked into my eyes.
Are you happy?
I didn't even have to think about the answer. I am. Baldwin's eyes closed briefly, and he gave me another silent nod.
Maybe we can get coffee this weekend and catch up?
I smiled.
Sure.
Coffee at Starbucks was probably the best way to reset our friendship. The reset was entirely on my end, because Baldwin had never really been interested in me the way I'd been in him. But now that I was seeing someone, it wouldn't feel right to go out with him for dinner. Maybe someday in the future, when more time had passed between the feelings I had for Baldwin and the start of a new relationship. But right now, it would just feel wrong. After we said goodnight, I took a minute to regroup my thoughts before going to the bedroom to call Drew back. It had been a long time since my feelings for Baldwin had grown. I couldn't turn them off completely, but something had definitely changed. Even though I knew part of me would miss the unrestrained comfortableness I'd enjoyed with Baldwin when there was nothing holding me back, I realized it was more important for me to respect the boundaries I knew Drew would want me to have, like not inviting a man into my apartment this late while I was in my cute little pajamas. Feeling content, I turned off all the lights and slipped into bed as I dialed Drew's number on my cell.
Hey, I said.
Visitor gone.
Wariness had crept into Drew's confident voice.
It was Baldwin. He wanted to check on me. Apparently he knocked last night and this morning and was worried because I didn't answer his texts today either.
What'd you tell him?
I told him I slept at my boyfriend's and had been busy, but everything was fine.
Your boyfriend, huh? Is that what I am?
There was relief in his voice.
Do you prefer to be called something else?
I don't know. What else you got?
Let's see. How about man who gives me many orgasms?
That sounds like my Indian name.
I laughed. How about landlord with benefits or Captain Prolactinator?
Call me whatever you want to Professor Putz, as long as he knows you're mine.
Mine. I liked the sound of that. I wasn't sure how it had happened. Knowing us, it had started to blossom in the middle of a fight and flowered while I was bent over his desk. But regardless of how we got here, somehow we had, and I realized there was nowhere else I'd rather be.
Are you alone?
Roman's down at the bar. Bartender is a woman. Don't think he'll miss my company.
Okay, good. I reached over to my end table and opened the drawer.
Did you hear that? Don't tell me he's knocking again. Slipping my vibrator out of the drawer, I decided Drew needed a little distraction from the last two horrible days. I switched it on and held it close to my cell for a few seconds before lowering it down my body.
Is that...
my vibrator. It's been lonely the last few weeks. Drew growled.
Fuck. I wish I was there to watch you.
I think I'd like that. Maybe when you get back.
Not maybe. I'm coming straight to your place from the plane.
His reaction fueled me. I rubbed the vibrator on my clit and spoke as my voice strained. How about you come a different way first?
Chapter 38. She's got balls, Roman not so quietly whispered to me as Alexa smiled our way while strolling into court with her lawyer, Atticus Carlyle. My hands clenched into tight fists. After coming up empty for a day and a half looking for her, I don't know why I was surprised she'd picked that asshole. I hated that fucking guy almost as much as he hated me. He was the quintessential good old Southern boy. Thick drawl, bow tie, and worked God into his opening and closing arguments. He was also the one attorney who'd ever made me lose it in the courtroom, and we happened to be assigned the judge who'd hit me with sanctions as a result of that unraveling. It was starting to feel like nothing was a coincidence. Needing to keep whatever semblance of calm I had left, I couldn't even look at the other side of the court. Judge Walliford took the bench, and the uniformed clerk called our docket number. He spent a few minutes reading with his glasses at the tip of his nose and then looked up.
Well, 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 look at what we have here. Seems the three of us have done this little dance before, haven't we?
Yes, Your Honor, I said.
Sure have, Your Honor. Good to see you again, opposing counsel drawled.
Walliford shuffled some papers and removed his glasses, then leaned back in his chair.
Mr. Jagger, why do you think this case should be heard in a New York City courtroom instead of here in Atlanta? Do you not trust the wheels of justice to turn at the same speed as you Northerners like things done?
How the hell was I supposed to answer that? I'd filed a motion for a change in venue based on residency. I cleared my throat. No, Your Honor, I'm sure this court would do a fine job in any case presented before it, but since the plaintiff and I are both residents of New York, I believe the proper jurisdiction would be New York County. According to our agreement, Carlyle butted in.
Your Honor, my client is a resident of the good state of Georgia. She was born and raised here. During her short-lived marriage to Mr. Jagger, she was a temporary resident of New York for a period of time. But she's recently bought a house in Fulton County, and this is the state of her residence.
He held up some papers and continued.
I have here a copy of the deed to her new home, her Atlanta driver's license, and a copy of the lease where she was temporarily staying in New York. You'll see the lease was not even in Ms. Jagger's name.
That's crap. The lease was in my name because I was paying for it. She's lived there for 2 years. I knew before I finished that I'd made a huge mistake with my outburst. Judge Walliford wagged his finger.
I will not tolerate that language in my courtroom. You Northerners might find it acceptable to communicate that way, but this is not a smoky bar or some slick city street. You will respect this bench. I'm warning you, Mr. Jagger, after your behavior last time you were in this room, you're on a very short leash.
And that was the best part of my day. Judge Walliford denied my motion to change venues to New York, and ordered a full trial on the change in custody petition Alexa had filed, to begin 2 weeks from Monday. The only thing he did in my favor was enforce our current custody schedule, where I had Beck Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights, as well as Wednesday for dinner. Although he ordered my visitation to take place in, you guessed it, the great state of Georgia. I waited until we were outside of the building before even attempting to approach Alexa. The last thing I needed was for her to scream that I was harassing her and have Walliford lock me up. I gritted my teeth. Alexa, can I speak to you, please? Carlyle took her elbow.
I don't think that's a good idea, Alexa.
I ignored him, looking my ex-wife in the eye. You owe me at least this much. It's been more than 2 years since I found out, and it still goddamn hurts. But I've never let Beck see or feel anything different than what he is to me. No matter what some fucking blood test says, he's my son. She looked away. Look at me, Alexa. Look at me. When she finally met my eyes, I continued. You know me. Will I give up even if I lose in 2 weeks? Her lawyer stepped in. Are you threatening my client? I continued to hold Alexa's eyes. No, I'm asking her to put our son first and not drag this out. She took a deep breath. He's not your son. Let's go, Mr. Carlyle. Thank God Roman was standing next to me. He wrapped his arms around my chest so I couldn't go after her, even as she walked away. Before the flight home, I attempted unsuccessfully to sync my calendar so I could spend a few hours shuffling my schedule in order to spend Monday, Tuesday, and half the day Wednesday in New York, then be back in Atlanta for dinner with Beck on Wednesday night. I'd then stay in Atlanta and work remotely Thursday through Friday before I picked up Beck again for the weekend. It wasn't going to be easy to cram an entire week's worth of client appointments, depositions, and court appearances into 2.5 days, but what choice did I have? My son needed to come first. He was already confused by the sudden move and not being able to spend his weekends at Daddy's place. I also had little doubt that if I missed a single visitation, Judge Wallaford would hear about it. I didn't need to give him any more ammunition to use against me. Even though my son was my priority, I had another focus now that I was back on New York soil. I hadn't been sure I'd be able to catch the last flight home from Atlanta, so I didn't mention to Emery that there was a chance I'd be back tonight. It was late, almost midnight, but I gave the cabbie her address instead of mine anyway. For the 6 days I'd been gone, we'd talked every night, and most nights ended with my jerking off to the hum of her vibrator. It had helped take the edge off, but at the same time also made me hungry for the real thing. The inside of her apartment building was quiet. I made my way up in the elevator without anyone questioning me, since her building had no doorman. I hated that, though. She needed a safer place to live. Any asshole could be knocking on her door. Come to think of it, one was about to. Setting my bags down to knock, I glanced over at the apartment next door. Yeah, she definitely needs a safer place to live. After 2 rounds of knocking, the second one so loud I thought I might wake a neighbor or two, a sleepy-looking Emery came to the door. Since she'd been asleep, her contacts were out, and she had her glasses on. God, I love her in those things. Hey, what are you... I didn't give her a chance to finish. Didn't even say hello. At least, not in so many words, anyway. Instead, I helped myself inside, walking her backward, as I not so gently took her face in my hands and kissed her. I kissed her hard and long, kicking the door closed behind me before lifting her so her legs could wrap around my waist. It felt incredible, like the cure for the perpetual suck-ass feeling I'd had for the last week. When I slipped my hand under her sexy little sleep shorts and grabbed a handful of her backside, she moaned into my mouth, and I had the urge to put her down so I could fist pump. But that would have meant moving my already fully erect cock away from the warmth between her spread legs, and there was no damn way that was happening. So, instead, I somehow made my way to the couch without tripping and unceremoniously dropped her on it before covering her with my body. I fucking missed you. My voice was raw. Emery's eyes were hooded and happy. I guess that much from your hello? I started to suck on her neck as my hands moved to take down her shorts and underwear at the same time. Did you miss me? Her fingernails dug into my back as I nipped my way from her neck to her ear. Yes, she breathed. I did. A lot. I bit down on her earlobe as I stroked 2 fingers up and down her pussy. How much? Are you wet for me? I already knew the answer, of course, but I waited for her to tell me. Yes. I rubbed her clit with my thumb. Yes, what? Yes, I'm wet for you. Tell me your pussy is wet for me. I want to hear you say it. I was already unbuckling my pants. Who knew how dexterous I was, somehow managing to undress both of us with one hand while sucking on her neck, her ear, her lips, and the other hand rubbing her wet pussy. My pussy is wet for you? God, there was nothing sexier than hearing Emery say she was hot for me. The last week of hell was a distant memory, and all I could think about was being inside of her. I missed you so much, I told her again, because even though I'd already said it, it was just so goddamn true. And I needed to be inside of her. She was going to have to take a big fat IOU on the foreplay this time, although from the sound of her panting, the feel of her wet heat, she didn't seem to mind. I pushed in slowly, my body shaking to keep under control. When I was fully seated, I would have sworn that frayed nerve endings had come alive for the first time in years. Her tight pussy enveloped my cock, and her legs wrapped around my waist, clenching me even tighter. Jesus, I don't remember the last time it felt this good. I started to move, mostly because I needed to feel that tight vice milking me as I slid in and out, and I realized I wasn't going to last very long. It was just too incredible. Emery opened her eyes as I pulled out, and our gazes locked. Taking both her hands, I twined our fingers together and lifted them over her head. I wanted to kiss her, but I couldn't stop looking at her long enough. The way she panted with every thrust down and made a little moaning sound with every stroke back was mesmerizing to watch. Her hips joined in, rocking in unison with mine, up and down, in and out.
Oh God, Drew, right there. Don't stop.
Miraculously, I managed to hold back long enough for her to come. I watched it transform her face, her head tilted to the side. Her eyes rolled closed, her full lips parted, and it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. When she'd started to come down, I picked up my speed, thrusts coming harder and faster, chasing her orgasm as my own pushed to the brink. Just as I was about to explode, I realized why it had felt so different, why every nerve was suddenly awakened for the first time. I hadn't put on a condom. Shit. I was going to have to pull... I didn't. I attempted to explain why I was about to ruin her ending, but I was running out of words as fast as I was endurance. No condom. She looked me in the eyes. It's okay. I'm on the pill. Come inside of me. Please. There was nothing I wanted more than that. To pour myself into her. My body ached for it with animalistic need, but as I let go... It also felt like I was giving her something I'd been holding back on a much deeper level. For the first time since the night I met Alexa, and she told me she was on the pill, I took a chance on trusting someone. Only, for some reason, it didn't feel like a chance with Emery. It just felt right.
Chapter 39. I felt the bed dip as Drew got up. Where are you going?
I was trying not to wake you.
He walked around to my side and kissed my forehead.
It's early. Go back to sleep.
What time is it?
5:30.
I leaned up on my elbows in the dark. Why are you up so early?
Need to get into the office and figure out how I'm cramming the 6 days of work I have booked into 5 already, into only 2 days a week for a while.
I take it you haven't looked at your calendar in a day or two?
Tried to, but the damn thing was locked and wouldn't sync up.
I settled back into the bed and pulled the cover up. Your first appointment isn't until 10. I didn't think you were back until this morning, or I would have started today earlier. Everything is rescheduled for the next 2 weeks for you. They're long days, but I was able to get all of your in-person meetings into 2 days each week. I converted one in-person meeting to a telephone conference, and you have that from Atlanta on Thursday next week. But everything else is all set. I also reworked my schedule the opposite way, so I'm light on the days you're here and full the days you're gone. That way I can help out with whatever secretarial stuff you need done to keep your day moving. Drew was quiet for a minute, and I started to worry maybe I'd overstepped and I shouldn't have gone into his calendar, but I'd wanted to do what I could to help. The bedroom was dark, and I heard the rustle of his clothes, although I wasn't sure if they were coming off or going on until he climbed back into bed. I felt his warm body press up against my side. He was still silent, so I turned to face him. Did I overstep? He stroked my cheek.
No, babe, You didn't overstep. You're being so quiet. I thought maybe I'd upset you. Just thinking.
About what?
How much right now I feel like I'm home, and I haven't set foot in my apartment in a week.
That quite possibly could have been the sweetest thing anyone's ever said to me. He was also right. I'd been jittery all week and hadn't realized until now that I'd settled the minute I looked through the peephole last night.
I know what you mean. You make me feel calm. At peace, I guess it is.
Yeah. His hand slid down my cheek, and his thumb rubbed the hollow of my neck.
Yeah.
I'm glad. He kissed the top of my nose. You know what I'm thinking now.
What's that?
How I should thank you for fixing my schedule. Whether I should use my mouth to eat you for breakfast, or turn you over and take you from behind while I finger your ass.
I giggled. You're really crass. You went from sweet to pig in 10 seconds flat.
His hand at my neck dropped to my breast, where his finger grazed over it and then pinched, hard. You like my crass mouth. Deciding he was right, I didn't fight the truth.
What were my choices again?
I heard the smile in his words. Mouth or all fours?
I swallowed.
Why only one? You don't have to be at the office until 10.
You want some more coffee?
It was after 6 p.m., and Drew still had another client coming in and a dozen phone calls to return.
I'd love some. Thank you.
I made his coffee just the way he liked it and brought it into his office. He was reading something with a blue back that I'd signed for an hour ago.
Thanks, he said without looking up.
You seem to be thanking me a lot today.
Just wait until you see what I have up my sleeve for tonight, he replied.
I knew he was busy, so I didn't want to take up too much of his time screwing around. He stopped me as I got to the door.
My place tonight. You can sleep in while I get an early start tomorrow, or take a bath if you want. My new slave driver of a secretary has me booked starting at 7 a.m.
Are you sure you wouldn't get a better night's sleep if I stayed home? You need your rest with all the traveling and stress you have going on.
Drew let the packet of papers he was reading from drop to the desk. Come here.
I walked back to stand in front of his desk.
Closer.
When I stepped around to where he sat, he surprised me by yanking me down onto his lap.
4 hours of sleep next to you is better than 8 in an empty bed.
You better watch it, Jagger. You're losing your sour and turning sweet on me.
I've been sweet on you since the first night you attempted to kick my ass. Now go. Go get your stuff. You don't need to stick around here if you're done, and we're supposed to get snow later tonight.
I left to do as Drew had instructed, pack an overnight bag and head back. The entire trip to my place, I couldn't stop thinking about him. Drew was the kind of man who didn't make it easy to get past his exterior, but when you did, it was worth the fight he'd put up to keep you out. Over the last week, it felt like our relationship had really turned a corner. I even called my parents while I was packing my bag and decided to tell them about the new man in my life, something I rarely did. Of late, say, I don't know, the last 3 years, it had been because there was no new man. But I also knew my mother would worry about me. She'd worry I was going to get hurt, or worry I'd unknowingly picked a serial killer to date, because, of course, everyone who lived in a big city had the potential to be a closet serial killer. So I was careful how much I divulged.
That's wonderful, honey. How did you meet?
He broke into my office and then bailed me out of jail the next day. Best first date ever.
He's actually the landlord for my new office.
And he's a nice young man. We didn't fight today.
Yes, Mom, he's very nice.
What does he do for a living?
Well, he thrives on misogynistic tendencies he developed because of his lying, cheating ex-wife, and attempts to extricate men from their failed marriages by leaving women penniless. He's an attorney. Family law.
An attorney? Very nice.
And family law, that's a noble profession. When do we get to meet this fella?
I'm not sure, Mom. He's so busy with work right now.
And fighting for custody of his son, who isn't technically his son because his bitch of an ex-wife saw him as her meal ticket when she got pregnant with another man's baby. She sighed. Well, just make sure he has the right values. Money and a handsome face often cause temporary blindness. Yes, Mom. We talked a little while longer, and then, I have no idea where it came from, but I asked her a question that fell out of my mouth. How did you know Dad was the right one for you? I stopped using the word I when I looked into the future. What do you mean? Before I met your father, all of my plans were just that, my plans. But after I met him, even after only a few weeks, I stopped seeing the future as mine and started seeing it as ours. I didn't even notice it for a while, but when I talked about things that were coming up, Saturday nights, holidays, whatever, I eventually realized I'd started saying we, not I. I stopped at the grocery store on the way back to the office and picked up some things to make dinner. Drew was going to be living in a hotel in Atlanta and working long hours when he was here, so I figured he'd appreciate a home-cooked meal. He came in as I was taking the lasagna out of the oven. Smells good in here. Hope you like lasagna. It's my second favorite meal. What's your first? He came up behind me, brushed my hair to one side, and kissed my neck. His word vibrated against my skin. You. Control yourself. You need to enjoy a homemade meal when you can. Your next few weeks are going to be busy. I opened the drawer to the right of the stove to get a spatula and found two matchbox cars and an old flip phone in with the cooking implements. I wondered where you kept the toy cars. Drew chuckled. When I tell Beck to clean up, he just shoves shit in drawers. Last year I found crayons in the spoon section of the utensil drawer. He'd taken the spoons and thrown them all in the garbage. When I asked him why, he shrugged and said we didn't need them because we could scoop things better with our hands, but nothing else made color on paper. I smiled. He has a point. Drew reached into the drawer and took out the flip phone. Remember when we first met, and I looked through the pictures on your phone? Yes. You told me the best way to get to know someone is to look at their cell phone pictures when they least expect it. Then after I let you look through mine, I found out yours was empty. I exaggerated a sigh. Jackass! Drew opened the flip phone, pressed some buttons, and offered it to me. I'm gonna go wash up and change before dinner. This is Beck's cell. It doesn't have service, but he likes to use it to take pictures. Every time I start to doubt whether I'm doing the right thing by staying in his life, if I'm confusing things by not backing off and letting his biological father step in, I scroll through those pics. Take a look. Drew went to the bedroom, and I poured myself a glass of wine and sat down at the dining room table to look through the pictures. The first photo was of Drew shaving. He stood in the bathroom wearing nothing but a towel wrapped around his waist. There was shaving cream on the left side of his face, and he held the razor near his chin after shaving one line down. The other cheek was already cleanly shaven. Off to the side, in the reflection of the mirror, I could see Beck holding the camera with one hand, and the other held a spatula covered in shaving cream up to his face, which was also half cleared of white foam. The next photo was of Beck standing in a stream. It looked like it could be upstate somewhere. It was probably taken a year ago, given how much Beck's face had matured. He wore waders and smiled huge for the camera as he held up a small fish he must have just plucked from the stream. I kept scrolling. Photos of Beck and his dad ice skating, a shot of them sitting together on the subway, one of Drew reading Harold and the Purple Crayon in Beck's bed, them riding bikes with Roman in Central Park. One that I had to turn the phone upside down to realize I was looking at the picture right side up. It was Beck taking the photo of the two of them while on Drew's shoulders. He'd leaned over to snap the shot of their faces. Photo after photo revealed their life together and showed just how much Drew was Beck's father, no matter what a lab test said. The very last photo surprised me. I hadn't even known Beck had a phone at the time it was taken, much less that he had snapped a picture. It was the afternoon we'd gone ice skating, prior to my falling and injuring my ankle. Beck must have been standing on one side of the rink, while Drew and I were on the other, and I attempted to skate. My legs were spread wide, something I couldn't seem to stop that day, and I was laughing on my way to falling into an ungracious split. Drew had one arm wrapped around my waist, trying to hoist me back up, and was looking down at me while he, too, was laughing. We looked so happy, almost like we were falling in love. My heart swelled in my chest. Drew was right. The best way to get to know someone was to steal glances at their pictures. He looked through the pictures and saw the love of a father and son, a reminder of why he needed to fight. I saw a good man, one fiercely passionate about the things he loved and who would do anything to protect them. Rubbing my finger across the screen as I stared at the picture of us, of me falling, I realized I'd fallen in more ways than one that day. I had to blink back tears to keep my emotions from getting the best of me, and decided I should get up and cut the lasagna to busy myself. Still preoccupied, I wasn't thinking and grabbed the side of the hot lasagna pan to turn it so I could cut. Damn it! I shook my hand and flipped on the kitchen faucet to run cold water over the mild burn. I'm batting 1,000 around this stove. Of course, Drew appeared at that moment. What happened? I touched the hot pan. It's not bad, just stings a little. Drew took my hand out of the stream of running cold water, inspected it, and returned it when he was done. I'll serve. Go sit. I don't want to end up in the ER for a third time already this year. We spent the entire dinner catching up, since we hadn't exactly spoken too much last night or this morning. Unless you counted communicating with our bodies. Drew filled me in on his custody trial strategy, and I told him about some new clients I'd taken on. The entire thing felt bizarrely domestic and natural. After we were done eating, Drew loaded the dishwasher while I cleaned the counters and table. Where was that picture taken of Beck fishing? He looked so adorable in his little waders. Upstate. Roman has a cabin in the mountains up in New Paltz. It's rustic, but has a big old clawfoot bathtub you'd like. We should go up in the spring.
I'd love that.
A few hours later, we were brushing our teeth and getting ready for bed when Drew said, Tess called today.
Who?
My secretary. She said her doctor thinks she can come back part-time in 2 weeks. Her recovery after the hip surgery is better than expected, and moving around is good as part of her physical therapy.
That's great.
In the whirlwind of the last month, I hadn't really been looking for a new office. The first week I'd called one real estate agent who'd shown me closet space in areas I didn't want to be for more than twice my budget. I'd taken a break after that. Although at the moment, the thought of what I could get for my money wasn't half as depressing as the thought of not seeing Drew every day anymore. I'm sorry. I need to get back to looking for new space.
Drew's brow furrowed. What are you talking about?
I rinsed my mouth and spoke to Drew in the mirror. Our deal. You let me stay while your secretary was out in exchange for answering the phones and helping out until I found a new place. He turned me around with his hands on my shoulders.
You're not going anywhere.
I can't afford to pay my share of what the rent must be for your office.
We'll work something out.
But he silenced me with a kiss, but kept his face close to mine.
We'll figure it out. Let us just get through dealing with this shit in Atlanta, and then we'll sit down and talk about it, if you want. Okay?
I didn't want to add any more stress to what he was already feeling, so I nodded. Okay. It wasn't until we'd gotten into bed, and I ran the entire day through my mind, that I connected some of the dots from the last few hours. Roman has a cabin in the mountains up in New Paltz. We should go up in the spring. We'll figure it out. Let us just get through dealing with this shit in Atlanta.
How did you know Dad was the right one for you?
I stopped using the word I when I looked into the future. Drew was settling into we as much as I was, whether he was aware of it or not. When he slipped into bed next to me, I wrapped my arms around him tight. Maybe, just maybe, neither one of us had found the right one before now. Because we hadn't met each other yet.
Chapter 40. It had been the longest 3 weeks of my life. The bailiff called the court into session. Judge Wallaford took his sweet-ass time. I'm sure he'd call it proper Southern time, to walk to the bench. Then he sat and rifled through a bunch of papers. Roman sat in the first row of the gallery right behind me, and he leaned forward to squeeze my shoulder for reassurance as I waited to find out how much my visitation was going to take a hit. I knew it was coming. I just had no idea how bad it would be. The last time